In just a moment, enjoy the All-American Sports Show. First, we'd like to remind you that weekdays, too, this NBC station entertains all of you royally. For a quiz, there's a trio of top shows, Red Benson's Phrase That Pays, and our two newest editions, Second Chance and It Pays to Be Married. There's great comedy with Bob Hope. Always very interesting guests with Dave Garraway and Tommy Bartlett's Welcome Travelers, and the accurate reporting of NBC's Pauline Fredericks and Morgan Beatty with his News of the World. Now stay tuned for the All-American Sports Show on NBC.
The All-American Sports Show. The National Broadcasting Company presents a colorful new dramatic series, The All-American Sports Show, dedicated to those figures in the world of sports and to their fans who by their example have upheld in American sports the traditions of courage and bravery, sportsmanship and honor. To tell us tonight's transcribed story, here is Joe Hassel.
Like most kids, I used to dream about playing shortstop for a pennant-winning baseball team, or scoring the winning touchdown in the Rose Bowl, or having the referee hold up my hand and announce, "The winner and the new champion of the world, Joe Hassel." Well, for most of us, those are just boyhood dreams. Dreams we put aside as we grow a little older. But the dream still lives on. It shines brightly in boyhood, then becomes faded and dim with time. But it never disappears, because every now and then someone comes along to make that dream come true for all of us. When Rocco Francis Marchigiano was growing up in the factory town of Brockton, Massachusetts, he had the same dreams we all have. Those long, long dreams that never can come true. When he was 7 years old, he made his rounds delivering 100 newspapers a day. And sometimes, as he took aim and tossed the papers up on the porches, he imagined he was a baseball catcher throwing a runner out at second base. He learned to scramble for every stray dime and quarter at an early age. He was the oldest of six kids, and he was just 6 years old when the Depression started in 1930. Things were slow at the shoe factory where his father worked. Besides, his father had been gassed in the First World War, and sometimes the job was too much for him. But even in tough times, kids have fun. Rocco played on the streets, in the schoolyard, and on the vacant lots. Sometimes he'd come home at dusk with his pal Ali Colombo, the kid who lived next door. And sometimes they'd sit on the porch steps and talk.
Gee, that was some hit you made today, Rocky.
Oh, I was just lucky, I guess. You didn't do bad yourself, Ali.
Gosh, I wonder if we'll ever get good enough to play for the Brockton Pros. Just imagine, playing in front of all them people, having your name in a paper and everything.
That would be something. If a guy plays on the Brockton Pros, I guess everybody in town knows who he is.
Yeah. I better get going. You coming over here to fight tonight?
Sure, and I'll bet Joe Lewis knocks him cold.
Eh, I don't know. Jimmy Braddock's still a champ.
Yeah, but he can't hit like Joe Lewis. Wait and see.
Rocco was just 13 years old when Joe Lewis knocked out Jim Braddock to win the heavyweight title. He liked all sports, and when he got to high school, he starred on the football team and became the hero of friends like Ali Colombo. But when six hungry kids sit down at the table three times a day, the food goes mighty fast. And a husky kid like Rocco may have been ashamed of his appetite. In his sophomore year, he talked it over with his Uncle John.
Hey, what's the matter, Rocco? Your grades is not so good, huh?
Oh, it's not just that, Uncle John. But here I am, a big, strong, healthy guy, doing nothing, while Papa kills himself working.
Well, I guess maybe it's no hurt if you do get a job. I see what I can do for you.
All kinds of jobs followed after that. Jobs as a dishwasher, a ditch digger, and a beer trucker's helper. He grew into a big, powerful, nice-looking guy with a quick smile and an easy laugh. He kept his old school friends and hung out with a neighborhood gang at the Ward II Club. When Rocky and some of the other fellows went off to the Army in 1943, they gave a little party for them.
the apple tree. Would anyone else but me?
Anyone else but me?
Anyone else but me? No, 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 don't say not me.
As the jukebox played a tune of the day and he thought of leaving, Rocco realized how much his family and his friends and his hometown meant to him. And he promised to himself that he would never forget them if he ever came back. Back home, Rocco had been anything but a fighter. He could lick anyone near his size, but everybody liked him, so he didn't have to prove it. But in the Army, his buddies kidded and coaxed him into entering boxing tournaments. He found that he liked the thrill of winning and the cheers of friends who had won a bet on him. But when he got out of the Army in 1947, he went back home to Brockton, stayed with his folks, got a job on a road construction gang. It was mighty good to be back with pals like Allie Colombo. And it was even better when they both became stars on that Brockton pro baseball team they dreamed about when they were kids. And he still hung out with a gang at the Ward 2 Club. But about that time, he met a pretty blonde switchboard operator named Barbara, and they started going together. If you were keeping company that year, maybe you'll remember this, too.
Give me 5 minutes more, only 5 minutes more. Let me stay in your arms.
Rocco was grown up now, 5 feet 11 and 185 pounds. And he was 23 years old, an age when most fellows are settling down to a regular job. But Rocco still didn't know what he wanted to do. And then his big break came. A sports reporter got him a tryout with a Fayetteville baseball team in North Carolina. That was a farm team for the Chicago Cubs. And he had high hopes of becoming a great diamond star as he set off with the best wishes of his friends and neighbors.
So long, Rocky, and good luck.
Thanks, Allie. Gosh, I'm kind of scared.
Ah, you'll make good. You can't miss.
I wish you were going with me.
Look, Rock, we've been in on everything together. When you're a star, it'll be just like it happened to me.
Okay, Allie, take care of yourself.
We're all pulling for you. When you come back, we'll have the band out for you.
This was his big break, and Rocco knew it. A chance to play in a regular league. A chance to go to the majors. Oh, he hustled every minute, and he watched the coaches to see what they thought of him. At night, he lay awake, wondering how he was doing, what his chances were. He went to sleep, determined to try all the harder, because the folks back in Brockton were counting on him. 1 week went by, 2 weeks, and 3 weeks. Then he got a message to report to the office. Maybe they were going to sign him to a contract.
Oh, hiya, kid. Close the door. Sit down. Cigarette?
No, thanks. I don't smoke. You wanted to see me about something?
Yeah. I'm sorry about this, kid, but we gotta let you go.
Let me go?
Yeah, I know it's kind of tough on you, but there's no use kidding. You'll never make a ball play. You got a dead arm.
But isn't there something I can do?
I'm afraid not, kid, except pack up and go home.
But I can't go home. Everybody knows I came down here for a tryout. It was in the papers and everything.
It's not your fault, kid. You did your best, and we gave you a fair chance, didn't we?
Sure. Sure, I guess so. But I can't go back to Brockton this way. I just can't.
I'm sorry, but that's the way it is. Good luck, kid.
The kid who had left Brockton with such high hopes was ashamed to go home now. He felt that he'd let everybody down. He got a tryout with a small independent team, but it was the same story. At last, he had to go home, back to the old neighborhood. Instead of the jeers he expected, he heard...
Tough luck, Rocky, but I'm glad to see you back.
Yeah, nice try, Rocky. You'll make it next time.
Forget it, Rocky. They don't know a good man when they see one.
Gee, I'm glad you're back, Rock. I'm going to enter you in the Golden Gloves tournament over at Lowell.
Oh, wait a minute, Allie. I'm not so sure about that.
Well, I am. Look, kid, with me in your corner, you can't lose.
Rocco went back to work as a laborer on a city housing project. went back to the Ward 2 Club and to dates with Barbara. With Al Colombo in his corner, he went to the finals in the Golden Gloves and then fought in amateur bouts for expense money. But he still didn't think much about boxing as a career because he didn't know how his mother and Barbara would like it.
Look, Rocky.
Hmm?
You've been knocking these guys out for nothing. For this fight, you get 50 bucks.
50 bucks?
Yeah, I got it all set. You fight this guy Joe Epperson over in Holyoke.
But he's a regular professional fighter. That's different.
That right hand of yours hits them, they're all the same.
I don't know. What about Mama?
Okay, okay. We don't have to tell everybody about it. We'll call you, let me see, Rocco Marfignano. Let's say Rocky Mac.
Rocco won his first professional fight under the name of Ray Mack. After that, Al Colombo insisted that Rocco shoot for the big time. And he wrote to Al Weill, one of the most famous managers in the business, and told him how good he thought Rocky was. In his small, cluttered office overlooking Broadway, Al Weill read that letter, as he had read hundreds of letters about young hopefuls. For more than 30 years, Al Weill had been looking for a heavyweight champion, and he decided to take a chance. He told Al Colombo to bring his new sensation to New York, and he'd have a look at him. So Al and Rocco put their money together, borrowed a few dollars, and then made their way to Manhattan with the help of a few friendly truck drivers. They felt a little out of place in the big city, but they finally found the little gymnasium on the west side, where they were to meet Al Weill and his trainer, Charlie Goldman. Then Rocco found himself in the ring with another heavyweight. They boxed in the nearly empty gym as Al Weill chewed on a cigar and Charlie Goldman squinted carefully but without expression.
What do you think, Charlie?
He looks plenty strong.
We ain't looking for weightlifters.
He can take a punch.
Yeah, but he's taken too many of them.
Yeah, plenty awkward, all right.
He's got a lot to learn.
Hey, look!
Get the water bucket, somebody.
Just one punch for the old right hand.
Anything he's got to learn, you can teach him, Charlie.
Well, with a punch like that, he don't have to be no dancing master.
Hey, come on over. You.
Yes, sir. Do you think he's all right?
Oh, sure. He's coming now.
What did they say your name was, kid?
Marchigiano. Rocky Marchigiano. Marchigiano.
A lot of things have to be done, but first we got to do something about that name. It's too long. It's too hard to spell.
Well, I don't know. It's my name.
How about March?
My father's name. I'm proud of it.
Let's see. Marciano.
I wouldn't want anyone to think I don't like my name.
Marciano. That's it. Rocky Marciano.
Marciano. Well, it sounds Italian, all right. I guess that's okay.
So Al Weill signed up Rocky Marciano, and Rocky went back to Brockton and trained as best he could until he and Al packed his fighting gear and set off for a boxing club in Providence. Rocky sat in a hot dressing room filled with the smells of sweat and liniment waiting for his first official fight. Other boxers came back bruised and bleeding as he waited for his name to be called. And at last the call came, and he made his way to the ring, through a room blue with cigar smoke, and filled with the jeering shouts of the crowd yelling for action. Rocky gave them action all right as he knocked his man out in the first round. The purse was $40, and the fight rated a single line at the bottom of the sports page. There were 10 more fights like that before he fought in the main event and knocked out Johnny Pretzi and got $250. He won them all, but now the going got tougher as he fought the headline boys. Charlie Goldman came to New England to teach him the trade, but the crowd laughed at his clumsy haymakers and his awkward feet. But they didn't laugh when his right fist added another knockout to the record. It was nearly 2 years before Al Weill brought him to New York to fight at Madison Square Garden. This trip was a little different from the one before, when he first tried out as a hopeful amateur. This time he showed them he belonged in the garden with a knockout. There was another knockout. And then came one of the most dramatic fights of his career. Rocky, with 26 straight victories, fought Roland Lestarza, who had won 37 in a row. It was a sensational fight with Rocky, a deadly puncher, against Lestarza, a tough, clever boxer. As round after round went by, the crowd roared again and again. The very last round found them slugging it out desperately at close quarters as the crowd rose to its feet in an uproar and then waited for the decision.
Judge Arthur Schwartz scored 5 rounds for Marciano, 4 rounds for La Starza, 1 round even. Judge Arthur Adela scores 5 rounds for La Starza, 4 rounds for Marciano, and 1 round even.
The judges have it exactly even. Now it's up to the referee.
Referee Watson scores 5 rounds for Marciano, 5 rounds for La Starza. The score on point, 6 for La Starza, 9 for Marciano. The winner, Marciano!
It was a close decision, a decision that has caused arguments ever since. But Marciano is now a top contender for the heavyweight title. That was in 1950, and on New Year's Eve, Rocky was back in Brockton for a more joyful celebration than any victory party. With Ali Colombo as his best man, he married Barbara amid the congratulations of hundreds of his friends and neighbors. Then it was back to the ring again, and the next summer he knocked out another outstanding challenger, Rex Lane. But it was that fall when Rocky really came to the attention of most of us. He stepped into the ring with Joe Louis, the mighty former champ, one of the truly great fighters of all time, who was attempting a comeback. The tension grew for 8 rounds. Suddenly, Marciano threw a left hook to the chin, and Louis was down. Then the old champ was up again, but he was hurt. Marciano forced him to the ropes. Louis buckled under a left hook, and then a powerful right sent him sprawling through the ropes to be counted out. All of us felt a stab of sorrow as we saw the passing of a champion. And back in Rocky Marciano's dressing room, there was an odd scene with a fighter who had just won his greatest victory.
Come on, Rocky. Time to get dressed.
Just a minute, Ali. Let me alone for a minute.
What's the matter? You won, Rocky. Don't you know you won?
Yeah, I won. But he was such a great champ. I hate to be the guy to knock him out.
That was a tough fight in many ways. But even now, fight fans were still wondering if Rocky was one of the great ones. Maybe he'd just been lucky with that right-hand punch. And of course, Joe Louis was all washed up when Marciano beat him. The next big fight was with Lee Savold, who was tough in game. They stopped that fight in the 6th round with Rocky the winner. But they called him clumsy and slow, a mediocre fighter. Once again, this kid who's tried so many times had to prove himself. And he got his chance against Kid Matthews, who had been touted as a new sensation from the West. When Rocky knocked him sprawling in the 2nd round, there was no question anymore. Rocky Marciano was the contender for the title held by Jersey Joe Walcott. Oh, they talk about the old-time fights in gaslit rings and on the barges in the rivers, but there's seldom been an all-out fight like the one between challenger Rocky Marciano and champion Joe Walcott in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Old Jersey Joe had learned his ring law through the years. He was best known as a clever boxer, but he had the punch to put the best of them down on the canvas. Marciano was still a kid who might trip over his own feet. The whole nation picked up sides before the night of the fight came, and then the whole nation waited eagerly for the result. Old Jersey Joe, with the pride and dignity of the championship, he made it the greatest fight of his career. Instead of retreating in his usual style, he carried the fight to Marciano and knocked him down for the first time in the very first round. Excited by the thought of being in a championship fight, Marciano came up at the count of 4 and took a furious beating before the end of the round. From then on, Jersey Joe stayed in control of the fight. Rocky threw everything he had, but Walcott retreated along the ropes and then made brief little flurries that gave him the decision in round after round. Then the 7th round came, and Rocky came back to his corner saying,
I can't see. I tell you, I can't see.
Some medicine intended to stop his cuts from bleeding blinded Rocky from that 7th round through the 9th round.
During those rounds, he took a furious beating as he flailed away at an unseen enemy who kept torturing him with punches from every angle. When the end of the 12th round came, Al Weill knew that it was now or never. All of the hopes and dreams of 40 years were wrapped up in these next few minutes. He tried not to show his feelings, but just before the bell rang for the start of the 13th round, he leaned forward and looked into Rocky's eyes.
Rocky, you're losing the fight, and you may never get another chance at this title.
Rocky had to knock his man out if he wanted to win. He drove Walcott against the ropes. Walcott knew he had to fight back. He started a right-hand punch, but Marciano beat him to it with a blockbuster that landed right on the jaw. Jersey Joe sank down to one knee. He grabbed at the ropes, but he kept crumbling. No one needed the referee's count to know that.
The winner and new heavyweight champion of the world, Rocky Marciano.
It all seemed almost too good to be true. It was his old friend, Ali Colombo, who came rushing out from his corner to hug him. And then, a little later, it was his wife, Barbara, walking with him through the Philadelphia streets as they talked about their plans for the child who would soon be theirs. No, there were never dreams that came true so unbelievably. So once again, Rocky went back to Brockton, Massachusetts. This was the kid who was ashamed to go home after he had failed on his baseball tryout. But this time he drove in a motorcade of cars with the mayor ready to greet him with a key to the city. But Rocky didn't need any key to the city because his family, his friends, and his neighbors still meant more to him than any honors that success might give him. As he rode down the streets, his wife was still at his side, and Ali Colombo shared the applause as they made their way to the Ward 2 Social Club. And there in the old neighborhood, his mama and papa were the honored ones, just as Rocky wanted it to be. After that, Rocky fought Jersey Joe Walcott again. This time, he knocked him out in just 2 minutes and 25 seconds of the first round in one of the most amazing feats in boxing history. Right now, Rocky Marciano is back in training, working hard to be in shape for a return match with Roland Lestarza next September. He's worked hard because he's the heavyweight champ of the world and he intends to stay that way. There you have part of the story of Rocky Marciano, a story that will be continued next September 24th when he fights Roland Lestarza at the Polo Grounds. The man who has been his toughest opponent so far. But no story about Rocky Marciano is complete without hearing from his manager, Al Weill. And Al is here tonight to tell us a little about what it takes to make a champion.
Well, Joe, it takes a whole lot. In short word, when it comes to a fighter, Joe, it takes natural ability. Of course, it takes courage, and it takes a lot of hard work.
What do you think more than anything else makes Rocky a great champion?
Well, a lot of people would say it's that terrific right-hand punch. Others would say the fact that he can take it. Now, Joe, I'd like to analyze this to you. He's a guy who can take everything if it's necessary and get even off the floor and then end the fight with one punch. But most of all of Rocky's willing to work. Some boxers train just a few weeks for a fight, but Rocky trains for months to have condition to train with and to fight with. Right now, he's training for the Lestarza fight, and he's up in camp grossing, as you know, away from his family and his friends and anything that might distract him. He's up early in the morning, working out all day, and going to bed early. It's a tough grind, but Rocky remembers those tough times as a kid, and he's not taking any chances with anybody.
When you ran across Rocky, he was unknown as a professional fighter. What made you decide to take a chance on him?
Well, Rocky came into New York with a boy by the name of Columbo who had written me about this good prospect. Naturally, you get a lot of letters from different fighters and so forth. They all have the greatest prospect in mind. But this boy struck me to be a real comer. When I took him down to the CYO in 17th Street and had him box with the boy that had plenty of experience. In the first round, he looked kind of awkward. In the second round, he knocked his boy out.
Mm.
I had a call time, and that was enough for me. He was a nice boy, and a kid that came in from Brockton from a poor family. You could tell he wanted to make something of himself, to do something for his folks. You take a fella who's hungry like that, and you know he's going to fight for you.
That's right.
And you know that he's right there when it comes to time to pitch.
What were some of the decisions that you had to make as a manager, Al?
Regarding to Rocky, Joe?
Yes.
There was one decision. I had to get the boy into New York. He had to do road work, had to box with different fighters, different styles, and so forth. Naturally, he was awkward, but that awkwardness faded as he went along. He had 23, 24 fights before I gave him a real tryout, and that was with La Starza.
Yes.
The fight was close, but he come on. In fact, he scored a knockdown in the early rounds, and he come on and win the decision. So that was quite an achievement of a boy that probably only had, all in all, I would say about 40 or 45 rounds of boxing, because he scored knockouts in all his other fights.
That's right. Well, I would say, Al, that your patience in bringing him along slowly and surely paid off real well.
Yeah. Joe, after waiting for a heavyweight champion for 40 years, I figured I would wait a little longer.
Well, after all these years in boxing, I suppose your biggest thrill was when the announcer declared Rocky Marciano the new heavyweight champion of the world.
It was, to a certain extent. But my real thrill, biggest thrill, in the boxing game, you see, I always like a fighter to take orders.
Mm-hmm.
When Rocky came back to his corner after the 12th round in that first Walcott fight, it seemed like he was beaten or a little behind. But just before the bell, I whispered to Rocky, "You're losing this fight. And you may never get another chance at this title." I felt Rocky kind of stiffen up, and it took him just 43 seconds to carry out my instructions in the next round.
Well, Al, I guess any manager would be thrilled to have a fighter to take orders that way. Thanks, Al Weill, for giving us your impressions of a great champion. That's our tribute to the heavyweight champion of the world, Rocky Marciano. Be with us next week when the All-American Sports Show salutes a great jockey, Ted Atkinson.
The All-American Sports Show was written by Jack C. Wilson, transcribed and produced by Dan Sutter, music by Paul Taubman. Rocky Marciano was played by Sandy Strauss, Al Weill by Charles Penman, and Ali Colombo by Richard Holland. This is Ray Barrett speaking, and this has been an NBC Radio Network production.
Saturdays, listen to New Talent USA on NBC.